Hey, Drinking Buddies, thanks for supporting our pop-up events. You can pre-order Drinking Buddy snacks for pickup at Toku Unagi and Ipudo in West Hollywood on October 23rd, as well as Lagu Cafe in Irvine and Nozomi Sushi in Torrance on October 30th. Head to www.okayamakobousa.com/pop-up to check out the menus and pre-order before we sell out. See you at the pop-up. You still have time to try out Roga Sake. Listeners to the Drinking Buddy Show get an exclusive 15% discount on Roga Sake, available only at www.rogasake.com. Use code THEDBSHOW from October 1st to October 31st, 2020, and get 15% off Roga Junmai and Junmai Daiginjo Sake. Sake isn't just for sushi. Try out Roga Junmai on a variety of robust and spicy dishes. Use code THEDBSHOW today and expand your pairings.
We've actually placed with two different beers, and that's like kind of what kicked it off of like, oh, you know, we might kind of be on to something here.
This is the Drinking Buddies Show, where we explore food, craft beverage pairings, and the entrepreneurs and tastemakers behind them. I'm Frank, founder of Drinking Buddy Artisan Snacks. On today's show, Jesse Sundstrom joins us from 10 Mile Brewing in Signal Hill, California. Jesse and his family have always done things together. Since he was a little kid, they'd always head up to the family cabin to relax and have fun. Jesse shares how that family that camped together became the family that brews craft beer together. Jesse, go ahead and tell me about yourself. Where did you grow up?
I actually grew up really close to where the brewery is. I grew up in Lakewood and was there for my entire childhood into my teens and then early adult life. Got married in 2013. Yeah, so now I'm married, have a four-year-old, have a almost 1.5-year-old, and then actually a third on the way.
Congratulations.
So we've got a big full family going. Thanks. So we spent most of my childhood, you know, we did a lot of camping, a lot of hiking, been backpacking the Pacific Crest Trail for many, many years. And we have our cabin up in the Sierras at a place called Hume Lake, which is actually the inspiration behind the name for 10 Mile. The main tributary that feeds the lake is called 10 Mile Creek. So that was just kind of a really good family name for us. And then it seemed to blend really well for the look and the feel of the place.
So how often did you go there as a kid?
We would normally try to get up there probably 3 to 4, sometimes 5 times a year. And then we would stay for like 2 weeks at a time sometimes when we were very young. And we would go up for like a month and stay up there. Obviously, that's gotten a lot shorter and a lot less frequent, which is unfortunate. But we still try to make it up there at least twice a year around Labor Day. There's always a big country fair that they do. And then we always try to get up there over New Year's.
That's a lot of fun. What led you to having an interest in beer?
That one is kind of funny because it really was not my interest at all. My dad was the one that introduced it to me. And he was introduced to it by a buddy of his up in Oregon. They were on vacation up there and they hadn't seen each other in years. So he's like, oh, I'm going to come out and meet you at your campsite and bring some growlers along. And dad was just, he's like, all right, cool. I don't care. I mean, he was drinking Coronas and I mean, that was their beer of choice, but they were much more wine people. Dad had done professional photography for 20 plus years and photographed really amazing wineries. And one of his personal favorites was Peter Michael Vineyards, which people in the wine industry will recognize that name. The entry bottle is like $200 a bottle, and he was given cases of it. So yeah, I was actually introduced to him. And then he came home and got all the equipment and everything. Started to brew in the kitchen at the house, and I happened to be home. I was like, what the heck is going on? So went in, joined him, and it ended up being an absolutely awful experience. I got sprayed with boiling wort sugar water, and I mean, I'm just getting splashed and sprayed. Dad screaming at me, don't let go! And mom comes in screaming, what's going on? Yeah, it's a great story, but it was painful. But yeah, that kind of kicked it off. And the more I learned about it and the more I dove in and started learning the science and the chemistry of it, it really clicked with me. And so then just kept going.
That's awesome. Now, was your dad in any sort of home brewing club, or is he just on his own with his advice from his friend in Oregon?
Yeah, at the time we were just on our own, but we eventually did become part of the Long Beach Homebrewers and learned a lot from them. A couple of guys in particular were really helpful and really opened up a lot of their personal processes and whatnot. So we learned a lot from these guys.
That's fantastic. So was this while you were a teenager? Was it a natural progression then that you started home brewing and kept doing it into adulthood?
When we did that first brew, I was 19, I think. I used to tell people, like, oh, I'm brewing the stuff that I can't have. And then it just progressed into, yeah, it just kept going. And then now, 10 years later, we're doing it professionally.
So at what point did you think you wanted to open up your own brewery?
We had been entering into a lot of competitions early on in our home brewing career, if you will. And we were doing them originally just to get feedback, get from people who knew what they were talking about, knew what they were doing, had had the experience of going through judging certification processes and all that kind of stuff. And so we eventually won our first one, and it was actually a really big one, is the LA County Fair. We actually placed with two different beers. And that's like kind of what kicked it off of, like, oh, you know, we might kind of be onto something here. Eventually, we kept going, and then we placed in the largest homebrewing competition on the West Coast, which is the Pacific Brewers Cup. And that was the one for me that said, okay, we've definitely got something here, and we could do it. That was my introduction into the thought process of, you know, we might be able to start doing this on a grander scale.
Now, what was the layout like? You're in Lakewood and you see Signal Hill. What made you want to do something in Signal Hill and not anywhere else?
Honestly, the Signal Hill location that we're in kind of fell into our laps. My brother-in-law was a Signal Hill police officer. And he knew of the guy that owned the building that we're in. And there's three warehouses that are all owned by this guy. And he kind of popped in one day and was like, hey, we're looking, like, my family's looking at starting a brewery. And this is a cool spot. Would you talk with them? And the guy was like, yeah. So we ended up meeting with the guy. And he's like, you know, I've had somebody else come to me about wanting to open a brewery. And I just didn't get a good feeling about it. But, you know, with you guys, it feels totally different. And so our landlord's been one of our biggest supporters. And he came in and was like, hey, whatever you want to do, whatever you need to do the building, just go ahead. Yeah, don't even think twice. It's like when you come into a rented facility and you're like, hey, we got to saw cut your floors and dig out a bunch of stuff and tear structures down inside. Usually they're not too keen on that.
Right. I'm sure it takes a lot of modification. How long was the process to build up?
It was a little over a year and a half that it took to do the build out. We did the majority of it ourselves. We ripped out the majority of the electrical and reran it. We ran gas. We ran some plumbing, not all of it. We built all of the tables and chairs and benches and bars and cold rooms and bathrooms and everything. We did that all ourselves. So it took a little bit longer, but we saved significantly more than we would have if we had hired it out.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've really bootstrapped it. Now, was this a completely family-run operation? Did you have any partners that came in?
Yeah, this was 100% family. So it was, yeah, mom, dad, my brother, and my sister and I. And yeah, we were fortunate enough to come in and have it be just us, no outside investors, no outside loans, anything like that. It was all held within the five of us.
So what was your opening like? Did you do a soft opening? Did you have a big grand opening?
Yeah, we did some soft openings. I think we did like 2 weeks of soft openings. And yeah, we kind of wanted to not post about it. We just kind of threw the door open just to see what would happen. And I remember the first guy kind of wandering in like, what's going on here? And so it just kept building and building and building. And then September 16th, we did our grand opening. And that was, we estimated that we had about 1,100 to 1,200 people come through on that first grand opening, which is insane. It was nuts. We have this documentary that's actually going to be coming out sometime, we're not sure. It's called Brewmans, and it's actually, it's a documentary about homebrewers going pro. So it actually follows Liberation Brewing in Long Beach and us. And it's this guy who came in and filmed for like 4 years now, all the way from when we broke ground to about, I think it was like a year or 2 years after we opened. And we've gotten to see some footage of it from that grand opening day. And it was just insane to see how many people were in here.
I heard about that documentary. Did they give you any sort of, it's next 6 months or they're still editing it?
Yeah, there was a screening that was scheduled back in May at the Arts Theater in Long Beach. But then that got delayed and the director, he really wants to do theater screenings first and then release it. He's done a few documentaries and his MO is to do screenings and then like sell it to Netflix or something like that. We're just going to have to wait and see, honestly. We've been talking about just telling him like, hey, bring it over to the house so that we can at least see it because we haven't even seen it yet. And it's been done for like 6 months, 7 months now.
Yeah, you got to be able to see your own thing. That's exciting though because it's just you and Liberation. Yeah.
And he definitely does get some of the big guys in the industry. So, I mean, he gets a hold of like Ken Grossman, Charlie Papazian, John Palmer, who's well known in the homebrew community. Gosh, who else? Jim Cook from Sam Adams. The one I'm actually most excited to see, they got a Fritz Maytag from Anchor Steam. That guy, he's just this like surly old dude who just like punch you out if you mouth off.
That's awesome. Walks right out of the interview after punching the interviewer.
Pretty much, yeah.
Thanks for listening so far. If you enjoy the show, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. Then head to www.thedrinkingbuddyshop.com and pick up some tasty pub snacks, barware, and more. Every purchase you make helps us support small family-owned businesses in rural Japan and bring you more delicious, unique snacks to pair with your favorite beverages. Special thanks to all of you that have already started enjoying our snacks and sharing them with your buddies. So how is it trying to balance a family operation? You've got two young kids at home and one on the way.
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge. I mean, the common phrase you hear, don't start a business with your family. And that was something that we honestly took pretty seriously. And there's a consensus between all of us that when it's here, it's business. And when we're out, we're family. And those two don't interact. They don't seep into each other. And it's worked out very well. I mean, I wouldn't do it any other way now, like having done it. I mean, it's coming in and being able to sit and brew with dad and, well, not sit, but come in and sure. brew and then sit with mom and go over books and distribution and all that kind of stuff. It's really cool. And to plan events and help Emma carry stuff out and the Taste of Japan event that we did. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I think the way you're doing it is a traditional approach that, like you said, some people say don't start a business with your family, don't start one with your friends, but so many businesses have in the past. So I think you're taking the right angle of when you're there for business. When you're home, you're a family member. Now, how have you been impacted by COVID-19? Obviously, everybody has been, but what did it do to 10 Mile?
Totally. I mean, it all but shut us down. With the mandatory closures, we had to convert to doing to-go sales only. We were not allowed to have anybody come, obviously, inside or outside even. And devastating. That really, really killed us here. I mean, I think the last numbers that I saw, we were down nearly 80%. But we were able to hold on. Having those early decisions of having it just be us and no outside investors or loans or anything really set us up to weather a storm like this because we didn't have those outstanding balances and we didn't have those outstanding debts that we had to keep paying. So that was really, really helpful. Our landlord, again, who I said was one of our biggest supporters, he came to us before we even knew that we were shut down. Hey, don't worry about the rent for a few months. Let's see what's going on and ride this thing out. And we're like, cool. Why? Because we had no idea. So that was, yeah.
What
so
do you know that we don't know?
Interesting. Exactly. It's like, oh boy, something's coming. But, you know, back in June, we were able to open for, it was about 2 weeks, and we were able to open for outside dining if we paired with a third-party food vendor, like a food truck or something like that. And yeah, they did that for 2 weeks, and the county had a big spike in cases that they actually blamed us for. So they shut us all down again, and only within a week where it was that reverted. So we were able to open back up with the third-party food vendors, but they've also added on a bunch of restrictions that are debatable to see if it's a very nice move.
So moving forward, yeah. You do have that opportunity to work with third-party vendors. In the long-term future, what do you hope to do with Tenma? Mm-hmm.
So in the long term, in this location specifically, we are in the early process of looking to add in a food option. So about building a kitchen here. One, to if the shutdowns happen again, that we won't have to be shut down again. But two, we've also been a really big foodie family. I know from our conversations with the Taste of Japan event, there was a lot of interesting stuff there that I was really enjoying. But you know, it's just kind of been something. We always had this thought that if we were going to open one, it was either going to be a restaurant or it was going to be a brewery. And so we chose brewery first, and now we're just looking to add the restaurant in later. And then 10 Mile as a brand as a whole, we're definitely looking into future distribution, getting out a little bit more. And if that picks up, eventually moving into a production facility to really kind of let things take off a bit.
That's really exciting. I hope that happens. It'd be great to see 10 Mile start spreading out well outside of Long Beach. Recently, you did the East Coast and West Coast IPAs as a combination, which I thought was fantastic. I love tasting the difference. Yeah. I thought that was a really brilliant way to do it, because you don't notice until you have them one after the other and you go, oh yeah, this is completely different. Jesse shares some upcoming beer releases from 10 Mile Brewing.
We stick to traditional style brewing, honestly. I mean, we don't really push the limits of what beer can be, specifically into the crazy double, triple, quadruple IPAs that some people have done, and the sours and highly fruited beers. Not to say we don't do any of them, but it's just not our focus. I mean, me personally, if I could be an all lager brewery, I would do it. I mean, if I could just do nothing but German and Belgian and Czechoslovakian lagers, I would be totally all over that. But, you know, you can't have everything you want. What we have going on right now, we've definitely got some dark lagers that are coming that I'm really excited about. We've got a Vienna Mexican lager that we normally do for Cinco de Mayo. But, you know, that all got thrown out the window. So that actually got pushed off to later this year. So it's kind of the Modelo Negro clone beer, if you will. That's the one that we tell everybody, if that's what you like, you're going to love this one. There's a Schwarz beer that is in the works. It's a German black lager. So that one's really fun. Yeah, not much more than our regular lineup.
That's exciting. I'm really excited about that Mexican lager. That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, that one's really fun.
Thanks so much to Jesse Sundstrom. You can learn more about 10 Mile Brewing by visiting their website at 10milebrewing.com and following them on Instagram at 10 Mile Brewing. Coming up on the Drinking Buddy Show, Joel Elliott from Strand Brewing in Torrance joins us to share stories. From Scientology to surfing to South Africa and Mozambique, he's seen a lot. Thanks for listening to The Drinking Buddy Show. Be sure to subscribe and share it with your buddies. Check out our latest artisanal snack offerings at www.thedrinkingbuddyshop.com. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Take care and drink well.